And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain right here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things that impact our lives. My first guest is the guru of self-discovery and job search. His book, What Color's Your Parachute, is continually praised as the most complete guide for job seekers and career changers. We discussed surviving the job hunt. My next guest is no stranger. We invited him into our living room for 24 years as the anchor man of CBS Evening News. If you want to call and speak to Dan Rather, you can always call us at 639-0008. Dan Rather is a journalist and former news anchor for CBS News. As I mentioned, he's now the managing editor and anchor of a television news magazine, Dan Rather Reports, on the cable channel HDNet. Dan was the anchor of CBS News for 24 years. He also contributed to CBS's 60 Minutes. He received his bachelor's degree in journalism from Sam Houston State University, where he was the editor of the school newspaper. Rather began his journalism career in 1950 as a reporter. He was discovered, as it were, as a reporter in the 1961 Galveston hurricane. That was Hurricane Carla. Welcome to the show, Dan. How are you today?
So glad to be with you, and I'm wonderful today.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that, and we really appreciate your being our guest. One of the things that I wanted to tackle with you today is a subject that I know that you're passionate about, and that is campaign finance reform. So I just want to set the stage here. The votes have been counted for the last election. It was by far the costliest election in American history. Here are just some of the statistics that I pulled off. More than $454 million was spent by outside groups to influence the midterm elections. Most spending in a race for the U.S. Senate was Colorado, $32 million, followed by Pennsylvania, $25 million, and Washington State, $19 million. Most spent on a House race was Michigan's 7th District, $8.5 million, Nevada's 3rd District, $7 million, and Ohio's 16th District, $6.5 million. To give you an idea of the magnitude of the outside spending in some of the House districts, three candidates in Ohio raised a total of $4.1 million. Outside spending was $6.5 million. Give us your overview of campaign spending contributions and the 2010 midterm elections.
Well, first of all, it's always good to be with you. Secondly, this is an important subject, and I think people are beginning to warm up to the subject and realize how important it is, that we're right on the verge, if not already over into, having a corporatizing of American politics. These figures that you read off are really astounding, and this last election, we're talking about the off-year election, is the most expensive election we've ever had in our history, between $2 and $3 billion. When you total everything up, was spent on this election. The last presidential election was $2 billion plus. Now we have to, as citizens, whether we're Republicans, Democrats, Tea Party people, whatever you describe yourself, we have to be concerned about this, because the question is, who is giving this money, to whom, and for what? The for what is they're buying it for power, access, and influence. Washington, I'm very sorry to say, I worked there 10 years as a correspondent, including the White House correspondent. I love Washington. We have to understand that Washington right now is rank with bribery. There's no other word to describe it, because when people give these kinds of huge sums of money, not everybody gives a lot of money, but the major players do. They're buying their way into influencing legislation and regulation. If we don't stop this, we don't stop it pretty quickly, we're not going to have the kind of country that you and I grew up in.
Well, I would agree with that, but the Supreme Court doesn't seem to be helping us out. In January 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that government limits on campaign spending by corporations was a violation of free speech under the First Amendment. Now, the ruling was 5-4, so it wasn't by any means unanimous, but what are the implications of this Supreme Court ruling?
Well, the implications are vast. First of all, it is now the law of the land. Although it was a 5-4 decision, it's not overturnable. That's not even a word, but it's not overturnable. It is the law of the land. Now, what this means is that very large corporations, in some cases unions as well, can now give whatever they want to a campaign without going through a party, Democratic or Republican, and without even going through the candidate himself. In other words, they can run their own campaigns, and this buys them tremendous power and influence. Now, this has been going on for a long while. What the Supreme Court ruling did was just open the doors and say, there are no rules. Anybody can give anything they want to anybody. And that means that the major financial centers of the country are in a position to buy the government. It grieves me to say that. It hurts me to say that. But that's the plain, unvarnished fact.
Well, it concerns me, too, and I'll explain why, Dan, because right now to be in the House or the Senate or even the presidency, you've got to be a millionaire, and you've got to be supported by corporations with millions, if not billions, of dollars behind you. Are we moving from a representative democracy towards a plutocracy, in other words, a land of the rich?
The short answer to that is yes. That I sometimes call it a corporatocracy because the corporations... that, again, it's not even a word, but because the corporations have so much influence, I want to make clear that, you know, I believe in the free enterprise system. I believe in the free market system. We're not talking about socialism or something here. We're talking about how the country is changing to, as you describe it, a plutocracy, that so many members of the House are not only millionaires but multimillionaires. And just about everybody in the Senate is at least a millionaire, and many in the Senate are many times over a millionaire. And then they're influenced overwhelmingly by other billion-dollar companies. This has got to stop, and I do think the public is awakening finally to this. But it gets down to the question of how to stop it, and this last Supreme Court ruling certainly doesn't help.
No, it certainly doesn't. We're talking to Dan Rather, everybody, of course, famous CBS correspondent for a number of years. Now he is the director and also the key personality in Dan Rather Presents. It is a cable television channel on HDNet. Dan, I'm going to switch subjects on you because it's another subject that I know that you're passionate about, something you've just been researching, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And that is the Catholic Church. You have been reporting on the shift towards conservatism within the Catholic Church. What are some of the key signs of the shift there, and why is that important?
Well, we're doing our program tonight on HDNet on this very subject, and it's the battle for the heart and soul of the Catholic Church, which, let us point out, has been going on for at least the last 1,500 years. But with Vatican II in the 1960s, the Church, realizing it was seen increasingly as irrelevant to a lot of people, the Church opened itself up to modernization. Such things as, one could say, the Mass in the language of the people to whom the Mass was being performed for. The congregations were given more influence, more access to the Church. This was what Vatican II was about, sure, modernizing the Church. Ever since then, there's been a building counterforce within the Roman Catholic Church that says, we don't want this. This is not the way the Church should operate. And they want to go back to what the Church was in no later than the 15th century. Now, an outfit, a group of people, I shouldn't call it an outfit, a group of very sincere people called SSPX, that stands for an ancient Roman Catholic Pope, they want to go back, want to go backward, saying, listen, the Church needs to get back to the fundamental way. They want Mass to be said in Latin. They don't want all this access and influence of from individual congregants or the congregation. They are in a battle. If you like, they're on the extreme right. On the left, what some would say is extreme left, are those who say, listen, Vatican II was terrific, and we need to carry forward in the future with the modernization of the Church. This is an important battle for people who are not only Catholic. Keep in mind that there are 1 billion Catholics worldwide, and the Catholic Church is one of the most powerful and influential organizations in the world. So this matters to everybody. This battle has gotten increasingly fierce in the last 2 or 3 years, and that's what we're trying to get people to understand with this program tonight. We don't take sides in it. We just report what is happening. Now, where the battle stands, the present Pope, Pope Benedict, has made some indications, mark that well, some indications that he wants to go a bit in the direction of these people who call themselves SSPX and others who want the Church to go backward in its traditional rites rather than going forward. So that's where that is. It is something that matters to everybody.
Absolutely. Now, American Catholics in particular, Dan, have always been different from the rest of the world's Catholics. I mean, and recently, because of the scandals, we've been rocked by scandals. Many of the American Catholics are starting to move away from the church. How would a move towards conservatism bring American Catholics back to the church, do you think?
Well, I'll give you the argument that's given to us and is put forward on our program tonight. Those who want the church to go back to more traditional ways say that by making the church deeper in meaning, that's a phrase they sometimes use, deeper in meaning, that it may suffer in the short run, but in the medium and long run, it will benefit, and it will attract people because of the depth of the meaning of their religious experience. That is their argument. The counter argument, of course, is the church can't move backward. It has to move forward with the times, and people who support this view make the argument the church has always done this, sometimes slowly, very slowly, but it has to move with the times or it will continue to shrink. Now, particularly with American Catholics, this is so important for Rome because the money to support the Roman Catholic Church comes primarily from Europe and the Western Hemisphere, and by far the most money comes from the United States of America.
Yes.
And the church realizes that it has a dilemma, that if it places itself in a position of going backward, put that in quotation marks if you want, then it will continue to lose American Catholics and will not be able to bring people into the priesthood. So the church is in a real dilemma, and I repeat for emphasis, it matters to everybody, Roman Catholic or not, because of the worldwide power and influence of the church.
We're talking to Dan Rather, everybody. And Dan, I just want to follow up with one more question on the Catholic Church, and that is this move towards the SSPX and the move towards conservatism. How is that going to play out on the world stage as we are facing off against Islam, which is another major world religion, and Islam starts to get more fundamentalist as well? Are we headed towards another crusade?
Well, I hope and pray not. There are people who think that a new 21st century crusade is already underway between Christianity as a whole, Protestants as well as Catholics, and Islam on the other side. I find myself in resisting that. I don't think we're at that point, but you make a very strong point here that as Islam, there's a movement in Islam to move it to a more fundamentalist state. There's a companion movement to move at least the Roman Catholic Church into a more fundamentalist state. And if the leaders of each of those two pillars of religious power in the world are not very, very careful, it could lead to an outright crusade.
Yeah, it does. Now, Dan, I want to focus a little bit on you, if I can, please. You've been reporting news for many, many years at this point. And I've got to ask you, looking back over your career, what would you say has been something that has astounded you as you've reported on it?
9/11.
Is that right?
Absolutely astounded me. Before that, the Kennedy assassination in different ways astonished me, but there's nothing in my career that has astonished me as much as 9/11.
And looking back over your distinguished career in journalism, how would you say journalism is changing today from perhaps when it was in the 1950s and the 1960s?
Well, two important points in no particular order. One, entertainment values have now almost completely overwhelmed news values. And much of what is put on television, on radio, and for that matter, in newspaper and print, is entertainment posing as news. Number two, the biggest change in American journalism, and it's the reason I say American journalism is in crisis, and that means everybody should care about it because a free and independent, truly independent, fiercely independent press is the red beating heart of democracy. And what threatens that is the corporatization, the politicalization, and the trivialization of news. Those three things are right at the point at the moment and put American journalism in crisis. As a people, as a society, as a nation, we are simply not getting the information that we need, partly because nearly everybody in journalism, there are some notable exceptions, has moved in the direction of saying our job is to entertain people, not to inform people.
Well, Dan, you bring up an interesting point there where you say the trivialization of news. What do you mean by the trivialization of news?
What I mean is instead of putting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan on the front page or leading your newscast or putting them in, more time goes to covering the antics of some Hollywood starlet, pick your name, Lindsay Lohan, whatever you, or the murder case of the week, or feature. features on such things as how to get a better deal on your summer rental and call that news. So that's what I mean.
I see. All right, I understand. We're talking to Dan Rather, everybody. And Dan, you know, if you were advising young people getting into broadcast journalism today, what would your advice to them be?
Number one, learn to write. Dedicate yourself to ever improving your writing. Writing is the bedrock of journalism. A lot of people who aspire to get into broadcast journalism don't seem to understand that. So that's number one. Number two, give yourself a gut check and a heart check. Journalism can be a great career. It's been wonderful to me. Let's face it, I've been mightily blessed and lucky. But in order to do it, in order to do it well, even at a reasonably low level on the pecking order, you have to burn with a hot, hard flame. You have to have a passion to do it. And if you don't have that passion or don't believe you can develop that passion, then you need to get into something else.
Oh, all right, Dan. Dan, we've got a caller, Gary, on the line who has a question for you, Dan. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Gary. You have a question for Dan Rather?
Yes. How you doing, Dan?
Fine, Gary. Thank you.
Good. I want to ask you a question. If the Supreme Court can always be in office as long as they can, how come when you talked about 9/11, why can't our security be the same way instead of having, like, say, influx of people into the thing and then, you know, when it happened, you know? I mean, it was sad. I mean, it was a sad day for me, too. But I just want to know, why don't they try and keep the same people in the positions for our security of our nation instead of changing when they change elections and you have different people come in?
What an interesting point. That's a very, very interesting point.
Okay.
It is in the tradition of American politics. Thank you, Gary. It is in the tradition of American politics that very often when a new administration comes in, particularly if it's a change in parties, Republican, Democrat, or vice versa, you have these major changes for security and intelligence. For example, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, it doesn't always, but it generally changes to someone of the same political persuasion as the political party in power. The thinking is, Gary, I'm not saying that I agree with this, but the thinking is that you do need some turnover in order to get freshness of thought, you know, new thought about things. If you leave somebody in a job, you know, too long. However, and I think this is your point, you have to weigh that against the getting somebody good in a position, get them very experienced, and just at the height of their power to influence things in a very positive way, then out they go. We do have a lot of turnover in the CIA. We have a lot of turnover in Homeland Security. We have a lot of turnover in the FBI, not so much in recent years. But part and parcel of this problem is so often the appointments made to these key positions for protection of our beloved United States of America, the appointments don't go to the most qualified, most experienced person. They go to the person who has helped the party coming into power politically the most, and that's a problem.
Great question, Gary. Thank you so much for calling in and asking it. Dan, I can't believe we're out of time. As always, it is a great pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Dan. Our pleasure is back.